Hey, Diggs. Proud of you, man.
Thanks, man.
Hit the music.
The worst intro ever.
Who said that? Is that you? You're fired.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. He was a high school All-American, a college All-American. He was All-Pro in the NFL. But the thing that he's most proud of is during his show in Muncie, Indiana, he made a woman in the crowd laugh so hard, she shit her pants.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Pat McAfee!
Hello, beautiful people. It is Wednesday, April 5th. This is the Pat McAfee Show. I am Pat McAfee. To my left, at Tactical Diggs. Next to him, at Todd McComas. Next to me on my other side, at Nick Marotto. On the ones and twos, Hoff, how's it going?
Yep, we're here.
How's it going?
Yep.
You usually cut him off when he says more than that. I think he was trying to adjust.
A lot of people getting fired today. I can just sense it. I just got them out of me. I think I just got Las Vegas out of me with another chug of an energy drink. I feel good about it.
It was a good one.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Today we have a conversation with Steven Jackson that you're going to want to hear. Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know who Steven Jackson is, he was a 14-year NBA vet who had a couple bad things happen, but the conversation he had with us, it all makes sense. Just a cool, cool, cool dude. You're going to want to hear that. Obviously, we're going to have sports updates. We're going to have a little world news conversation. And since we didn't do it yesterday, we're going to go behind a badge with a Q&A from somebody on Twitter. Today's going to be a fun show, but let's get right into it. Diggs, what's happening in the sports world?
Let's keep it moving real quickly. North Carolina won the national championship. It was a horrible game. Couldn't hit a shot. Refs were bad. A lot of free throws, and we're good.
Everything we said.
Yeah.
Before watching the game, what did we say? We mocked it completely. I don't know much about basketball, but I know every single big game comes down to the same things. Refs are bad, foul trouble, missing shots.
I put the interns in their place.
You won.
Yeah.
You won the old the whole bracket challenge?
Yep.
How did I do in Dan Patrick's? Does anybody know? Doesn't matter.
Got I think you won.
Did I? I don't think so. I had Michigan winning it all. They haven't played in 2 months.
They haven't played in 2 months.
Forgot about that one.
Yeah, it's been rough. But I'm proud of you for winning.
Thanks, man.
Let that out.
Unbelievable. Yep. Unbelievable.
I hate New York so fucking much. I hate it. I am
New
so...
New York City!
He's so quick.
he snuck it in there before I even had a chance to finish my burp. Once again,
hey,
we are
fat kid.
We got a message. Hold on. Ooh. Play that again.
Crazy fat kid.
That legend right there listens to our podcast.
Yes.
Absurd. Someone who's in the know.
A leaker. which is a problem in Washington, D.C. right now.
Let me play the extended version of what he said.
Which the virgin?
Part of, yeah. Virgin? Did I say virgin?
Yeah. Play the whole virgin.
China is the one that can, the only one that can control Kim Jong-un, this crazy fat kid that's running North Korea.
Gangster quotes I've ever heard out of a politician. He listens to the show. One of his leakers in his staff. He needs to know that somebody in his staff is telling people
he said, that. He prefaced it with, "This is not. You should know this is not an official reach out. I just thought you guys would appreciate that he has heard the Kim Jong-un update on your podcast and chuckled out loud."
Seems like an official reach out.
That sounds like it to me.
No, because that's just so you guys know. He likes your
show. It was a pat on the back.
If somebody comes into my DMs and says that to me, I'm thinking they want to have sex.
Well,
unbelievable.
Okay, that's
I can't believe you just
get arrested.
I cannot believe you just compared John McCain sliding into Todd McComas's DMs to you having sex with some very attractive girl.
If we could somehow make that official, we are big fans of John McCain.
We love John McCain here.
He is an true American hero. Was in the Hanoi Hilton prisoner of war. Was offered be the first person released because his dad was an admiral or something.
And what'd he say?
He said, "Nope, I'll wait my turn."
That feels like what I do at the grocery store. Just very different. You know what I mean? Just very different. Very different.
Levels, yeah.
There's levels to this. There's heroic ways and then there's everyday ways.
Yeah.
You know, I have some fans that work at grocery stores. They want to check me out in front of other people. You know what I say?
No.
Nah. Let me wait. This housewife in front of me needs to get drunk quicker than I do. Let her get her wine. She hates her kids, hates her life.
Toughest job in the world. toughest
John
job
McCain?
In the world. No, the housewife. It's terrible.
It's
so much responsibility.
Toughest job in the world.
It's so hard in your pajamas to
Navy SEAL.
Todd, read the room. Okay? When I'm telling you how hard it is in your pajamas to throw a DVD on and sip some wine all day. Read the fucking room, Todd.
Don't take any shots in Housewives. We probably got a few
fans.
Oh,
I know I'm going to get some shit.
Yeah,
there.
Absolutely. Yeah, we can't even say the word pussy without getting 10 tweets.
No, I
tweets.
Say it lovingly.
Yeah, it's delicate, very important thing.
Yeah.
Both housewives and flowers. Vaginas and flowers. Absolutely. So John McCain listens to our show. We predicted what was going to happen in that basketball game.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which everybody could do.
It was bad.
That was a big night for hockey guys everywhere. I'm so excited.
Look at how fucking giddy.
Why? Is it because it's over now?
It's awful, and it's over.
You thought it was a
horrible. Playoffs are coming.
You thought it was a horrible game.
Terrible.
Hoff said, I didn't watch the game because it was the Raw after Mania. I was watching that. A lot of storylines getting set up on Monday Night Raw. Maybe more people should pay attention to that. Real stuff going on. But he said nobody can make a shot because it's a football stadium.
No, it was brutal. No one can make a shot. The refs just were atrocious.
The refs were terrible. Do you remember about 4 or 5 years ago when Butler and UConn played?
Yeah.
Same thing. I think they played in it was either here or maybe Dallas. I forget.
There's no background.
There's no background. Butler shot 18% for the game.
And it's all a visual thing, right? So whenever you're trying to hit a very small hole, it's visually
with a
deceptive.
Transparent backboard.
There's 50 yards behind them they're looking at.
Yeah.
That'd be difficult. That'd be very difficult. I don't think I mean, I'm a.
I mean, I do that in the streets, but.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. Should.
In the streets.
Should they practice? Because they had a game on an Air Force carrier or at a. And how does that go? Is that the same just miserable failure?
It's all depth perception. So, like you're saying, you got to practice that. You got to get out and, like, play outside or play in a big open area like that.
Hey, real cocky move if a coach has their team go practice in a football stadium early in the season, by the way. But I like it. Like, if Bob Huggins takes the WVU team and puts a court in the middle of Milan Puskar Stadium at West Virginia and has them practicing early in the season, I'm like, yo, calling his shot right here. This guy's getting practice in now. Every third practice, we're doing it in a football stadium. Just get ready for the national championship.
Love that.
Will they continue to do that? It's too much money not to, right?
Yeah, they have to.
Mm-hmm. And I am so sick of everybody talking about money in college players. Dan Dockich, who's a very regular friend of this show, just got into it 2 nights ago with Frank Kaminsky, formerly of Wisconsin, now of the Charlotte Hornets. And Frank Kaminsky was basically just saying, like, I should be able to make money off my name when I'm in college. And I agree with him completely. Dan Dockich doesn't, because Dan Dockich was a coach who benefited from this system that is currently happening. You see, when no players are getting paid, all the coaches get paid. So that's why you can't ask a guy with his hand in the cookie jar what his real thoughts are whenever you're talking about taking cookies out of that goddamn jar. That's just like the government. Whenever you ask them questions about how they're doing taxes and all this other bullshit, they have their hands in a cookie jar. You can't talk to them about taking cookies out of the jar. It just doesn't make sense on their side, if you look at it from their side. But from a reasonable side, it's about time college players make money off their own name. Because when you go to college, you sign a paper for the scholarship, which is awesome. But the school isn't losing money. They're just giving a free class to a couple people. The scholarship money is going back to the school. So when you sign that scholarship, you shouldn't be signing your name to the NCAA. You should be signing your name and letting that school use your name. You should still own your name. And when you sign that scholarship, the NCAA owns your name, which I think is bullshit. That's my big issue with the whole thing. I don't know how you get into schools paying players because there's a lot of games and sports and teams that don't make money. But if a guy can make money off his name, this is America. That's what should happen. I don't know why that's not allowed to happen except for the fact that the NCAA thinks they own all these players, which we get into a much bigger issue that we tackled with Seattle Seahawks and Marshawn Lynch a couple weeks ago. Frank Kaminsky and Dan Dockich got into it, though.
I think a bigger issue is how much coaches make.
They're the highest paid state employees everywhere you look.
Yeah, that's the little rough part for me.
So whenever Dan Dockich gets into it, he was one of those coaches, and all of his friends are the coaches. So you can't ask people that are benefiting from the way things are right now for their actual opinion because all they're looking out for is themselves. So you can't hate Dan Dockich for it. He's just trolling right now for anything. But you can't have a real conversation with people like that. And you can't have a real conversation with the NCAA either. I tried. I tried my best. We got invited to the NCAA headquarters, which is here in Indianapolis, my rookie year. Okay? And it was like, if you don't make it in the NFL, this is an option for you. They had no idea that whenever they were pitching to us about what the NCAA does, they were walking into a buzzsaw.
What's an option to work for them?
Yeah. They're like, that's what they wanted. So all the Colts rookies, it was me, Donald Brown, Gerard Powers, Austin Colley, Feely Mwala, I forget all of the names, but there was like 15 of us. And they're like, hey, big trip to the NCAA today to go learn about other opportunities. And we sit down and we get at this table. And I look around and I look at like Austin. I'm like, I don't know how you guys feel about this place, but I fucking hate the NCAA. And Austin Colley was like, yep. And Donald Brown was like, I fucking hate him. I'm like, okay. And the person that was representative of the Colts, his name's Richard Howell. He's a really good guy. I said, Rich, I think it's going to be a war. He said, okay, I'll sit back. He sat behind us back here. And one by one, these people walked in to talk to us. It was like this big conference table and to like show us what they were doing and how lucky we were to be in the NCAA headquarters. And I think Donald Brown led off. This guy comes in and goes, the NCAA officially runs, and they named all the athletes, blah, blah, blah. Donald Brown raises his hand and goes, so my question is, how come they can sell my jersey and make money off of me, but I can't make any of the money? And the guy was like, as a ex-college athlete myself, I was just happy to represent the school. And I was like, what sport did you play? He said, I wrestled at a D3 school. I said, yeah, your school made zero fucking dollars off of you. We don't need to talk to you, buddy. Thanks. And he left, right? So now they know what's going on in this room.
Yeah.
They had four other speakers ready for us. They all came in like prepared, ready for war. So this next lady comes in talking about like how awesome the NCAA is and all this stuff. I raise my hand. So I have a question. Yeah. So my school, like at West Virginia, when I was a freshman, very low budget school, the locker rooms were shit, all the school, everything was shit. I leave 4 years later after winning our first four bowl games, two of those being BCS, the entire campus is revamped. Our coach just got a couple million dollars in Michigan. Another guy got a few million dollars. Our enrollment's up three times. Do we not see any of that? And the lady goes, well, they gave you the opportunity to perform a sport that you love and do everything that you love for free. Mm. You should be excited for that. And Austin Colley goes, that's not the right answer. Lady leaves. Okay. So now that's two people down. We're supposed to have four speakers. They send in the higher up guy. They bring a guy in from way up because they wanted to do this every year. It was very obvious this was never happening again. Yeah. We just so happened to be the first group. We ate lunch before the next speaker, and Richard Howell, the guy from the Colts, is like, how do you guys think this is going? Like, yeah, this is not, we're having fun. Like, we were enjoying it at this point. Like, we were having a good time. So we eat lunch, and they offered me a toothpick. So I was like, toothpick in my mouth, and we had like one speaker left because the one person dropped out. This big guy walks in from the up top, and he goes, welcome to the NCAA. And he looks at me and goes, take that toothpick out of your mouth. Would you ever use a toothpick at a when you walk in for a job interview? I said, this isn't a job interview. I never want to work for you guys. I hate you guys. I'm here because I'm forced to be here. And that guy was like so taken back because he's in a suit, big high up guy. And Austin Colley goes, have you not heard about how this is going? Have you not heard about this at all? And the guy goes, I heard you guys got some questions or whatever, and I'm here to answer them. And I go, why weren't we allowed to make money off our name in college? And the guy goes, because it's amateurism. I said, you can't use a word that you made up as a fucking the NCAA made up the word amateurism, and they use that as their reasoning for why college mm-hmm. athletes aren't allowed to make money. You can't just make up a word and say, yep, that's why. You can't fucking do that. We're not that dumb, you fucking idiot. And the guy just walked out. Colts were never invited back.
Oh.
Never invited back. So, I mean, the NCAA won't listen. Coaches won't listen. TV networks definitely won't listen because that means they have to pay more money because now they're paying players. But I don't think they should pay players. I think players should be able to make money off their names. And I think that's what Frank Kaminsky was saying too. But Dokic took it to a whole nother level because Dokic had his hand in the cookie jar. And I love Dokic, but this is a fight he gets in every single year around this time whenever sports are kind of running dry. So I think he's trolling, but you got to do what you got to do. Anyways, what else going on sports, dude? Follow that.
Oh, I got you.
All right.
One of your fellow employees, also retired, Tony Romo.
How about that?
And even better news, he's replacing the worst color analyst on TV.
Who's that?
Sims.
Why does everybody hate Phil Sims?
He's the worst.
He's brutal.
Why?
Go ahead. He just makes shit up and it's like hard. Just Google it. Just fucking Google it.
You hate Phil Sims.
You would expect more. You would expect more insight from a guy that played at that high of a level and performed that well. And now it's like he mails it in almost. It's just the most generic, blatant comments. Half the time his sentences don't make sense. His accent's brutal.
Him and Mike Carey were phenomenal together, though.
Mike Carey, the ref?
Yeah. When they used to go to Mike Carey for...
That guy never got one right.
Not one.
Not a one. Like you, the ref professional never gets one. That's like Mike Pereira is the guy for Fox, right? How does he do?
He's pretty good. He's pretty good.
He and I saw Hamilton at the same time.
He's sitting there drinking his Tito's.
Todd was
there. He was there.
Yeah. You know how when you go see Hamilton in New York, celebrities are there?
Yeah.
Big time celebrities? You know the big time celebrity was there when I was there? Mike Pereira. Right down here with his wife. All in, too, on the show. Legs crossed in a very flexible manner. Like, you know those guys that can cross their legs in a very flexible manner? Mm-hmm. Like, it sits, like, underneath. It's kind of like a pretzel thing.
Me and him, we're in the same family. So is Nick.
Paisans? Yeah, you fucking Italians.
Yeah, I don't cross my legs like that, though.
No.
That's a
careful with the vibe you're putting out.
No, that's a very Italian thing to do.
I'm a right angle guy.
Nope, that's a very Italian thing to do, is sit weird.
I can't even argue that.
You're not wrong, but it's not me.
Italians sit weird. I mean, that's just something you guys do. I think you guys should embrace it. Mike Pereira has embraced it to the umpteenth power. But I think whenever Steratore is finished, he's going to be a great TV ref person. But Tony Romo, you think Tony Romo is going to be good?
I have no idea. My question to you is, was he good? I've been trying to think about this all morning, if he was good or not.
I think he was playing when they beat us by 100.
Are you asking if he's like a good quarterback?
If he was a good quarterback, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
That's so interesting to think about, though. He was good. If you made the NFL, you're good. He was an undrafted football player that made the NFL.
Was he a good NFL quarterback?
Yeah. So,
like, you want to tier him.
No, I don't like doing that. I don't want to play that fucking game.
Like the elite game.
Had to be above average, right? I mean, given his
I don't know,
career.
Really. I mean, now that you think about it, you have no idea. You got Dez Bryant out there, who's an absolute freak.
He only won 78 games. Is that a lot? No.
I don't know. Is it? How many years?
10?
He had to win more than 78 games.
No, I saw it all this morning. That's why he's an enigma. My mind's in a pretzel.
The first couple of years he was there, though, they weren't very good.
They won two playoff games his entire career.
I have not even thought about this ever until you just raised this question.
I have no idea. He's
undrafted free agent, right? He's an American dream story.
Yeah.
Undrafted free agent, comes in, dates the girl that called tuna chicken of the sea for real, almost gets married to her, marries another thing, has a great career for the Cowboys. I don't know if it's a great career. Had a hell of a long career with the Cowboys.
Four-time Pro Bowl.
Yeah, but if you're a quarterback, everybody makes the Pro Bowl.
Okay.
Led the league in passer rating in 2014.
That's an incredible stat. There you go. There's a really good stat for him. But to make the Pro Bowl as a quarterback, you just got to be in the top half of the league. You got to be top 16. So it's not really that impressive. They want every quarterback at the Pro Bowl because the top two guys on each aren't going to go because they're in the Super Bowl. Then you got the next two guys are hurt. So now you're down to like the 12th and 13th guy. Mm-hmm. You just have to be in the top half to make the Pro Bowl and a quarterback. So I don't – that's not a great stat. But that passer rating thing's gigantic.
I would like to know if the year he got selected for the Pro Bowl, was he dating Jessica Simpson? Like, it's sometimes a ploy to get that person
to
the
prime?
Pro Bowl.
Was it Daisy Dukes, Jessica Simpson?
Oh, yeah. My God. She was
– it was like just after that.
It was right after her breakup.
That
with
pink bikini
with,
98 degrees guy.
Yeah, Lachey. Nick Lachey.
Lackey.
Did you watch that reality show ever?
No.
Yeah, I was glued to it.
I watched it a lot.
I watched clips.
I didn't know you could be that dumb. I had no clue. Like, I'm a stupid person. A lot of people say that. I had no idea you could be that dumb.
And Nick Lachey, pretty cool dude in that show.
Very chill. But boy, he married a...
He knew what he was doing.
What was he doing?
She's a trophy.
I mean, some could say that was sexist.
Celebrity game. It did up his celebrity game.
You think Jessica Simpson helped 98 Degrees get bigger?
No, 98 Degrees was kind of not big when they got married.
You can't get hotter than 98
Degrees. She helped resurrect. She gets sick if you get hotter than 98 Degrees.
<It's cool>. I don't even want to laugh at that.
Laugh.
No.
Laugh.
No.
It was a good one.
It was a good one.
Tony Romo really is, though, like your dad that's playing out there. That's what he felt like when I watched Tony Romo. I'm like, that's my uncle or my dad playing backyard football with a bunch of professional athletes.
Like, you're afraid he's going to get hurt at all times?
All times. You thought he's. That's only in the last couple of years, by the way. People are knocking him for being hurt all the time. Early in his career, it couldn't have been. He made 4 Pro Bowls. That means you have to finish the year, because if you're playing in a Pro Bowl, that means you're healthy at the end of the year.
Do you think Jay Cutler's good?
Yeah.
He's very, very similar.
What kind of stats does he have?
Jay Cutler didn't have the best offensive line in football in front of him, though.
But
Tony Romo did.
But if you never had great stats, can you brag about being great? Can anybody call him great if he never had really great stats?
I don't think
that's my question. Maybe he did. I don't know. Can I would like to know that.
Is Tony Romo? This is a fucking mind blowing.
I was thinking about it all morning.
Because when I think of Tony Romo, I'm like, yeah, good quarterback. And then whenever you start listing off his stats, it's like.
Well, I mean, he had good stats. Let's put that. He had, like, as far as touchdowns and yards.
Two playoffs.
That's not it.
Two playoff wins, but he made the playoffs more than that, right?
I don't know. They're always, they're perennial 8-8.
They're always on national TV, too. Dallas Cowboys are always on
national
TV.
So he gets
TV.
Better pub, you think, than...
A lot of pub. New York Giants, Washington Redskins, Philadelphia Eagles, Dallas Cowboys are always on national TV because I think Jerry Jones owns a part of Fox. Hmm. So that puts them on national TV the time. So Tony Romo's getting shoved down our face for so long, and then Dak Prescott comes in and they just take off. Do you think the Dallas Cowboys are as good this year with Tony Romo instead of Dak?
I think they're very similar.
You think Dak's not that good then? You're
saying? No. I mean, he's a rookie. I think he's going to be great.
Do you think he's going to have a second year? Everybody says the second year is the hardest. Second year slump.
RG3 had it.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be as good.
RG3, his first year, he had to make zero reads. They ran an offense.
Oh, I know.
He won rookie offensive player of the year over Andrew Luck, which is the dumbest thing I've ever witnessed in my entire life. But the entire media wanted RG3 to be successful.
They ran a college offense for a year until the NFL was like, no.
Until everybody got fast and caught up. You can't do that here. Not going to work, RG3.
Do you think he's going to be good on TV?
Tony Romo?
Yeah.
I think he is.
He's getting plugged into number one immediately. So
I think he is going to be really good on TV.
Let me tell you some interesting Tony Romo things here.
All right.
Most consecutive road games with at least one touchdown pass, 41. Highest QB rating in the fourth quarter.
Clutch gene right there.
Dallas Cowboys career leader in passing touchdowns and passing yards. Games with 3+ touchdown passes, 40. The next closest for the Cowboys was Danny White with 20.
How's he on Thanksgiving Day?
I don't see that.
Because I'm passing for 1,000 on Thanksgiving.
But if your baseline is saying good, I think he meets that.
I think he's definitely good.
Yeah.
You don't start for that long for the Dallas Cowboys on national TV every week if you're not good. Is he great?
No.
No.
I don't think so. No. But I don't think a lot of guys are great. I think there's only a few guys that you can classify as great. And they're the guys that are, you know who they are. You know exactly who they are. Whenever you think quarterback.
It shouldn't be a question.
Tom Brady. Aaron Rodgers.
Great.
Philip Rivers.
Great.
Drew Brees.
Great.
Drew Brees is fucking great, isn't he? You Purdue guy, you would give a little shout out to him.
I give you a pause.
Who's in the middle?
I give you a chance.
Matt Ryan.
I think Luck is an up-and-coming great guy. He's got to make better decisions, but we also got to protect him. I think he has a chance to be phenomenal, not just great, phenomenal.
Well, his first, how many years is he in now?
5.
His first 3, they thought he was the next coming.
Well, when Bruce Arians was his offense coordinator, that's a lot different. I mean, Bruce Arians was the perfect fit for him until that all got messed up with a GM that wouldn't pay him any respect. So then he went and took a head coaching job elsewhere and painted it on people. Bruce Arians is one of the coolest humans on earth. Didn't want that head coaching job, wanted to stay at the Colts. Didn't get it shown any love. Says, well, see you, cuz.
Somebody fucked up.
Nah, I mean, it's just the business. You know, it's just the way it goes, and people make some interesting decisions. But if Bruce Arians would have stuck with – Bruce Arians was in line to get that Chicago job, too, from what I've heard. And if he would have been with Jay Cutler, Jay Cutler's career is a complete different animal. Whenever you got – whoever's pulling the strings for a guy is gigantic until the guy can pull his own strings, right? So Peyton Manning had Tom Moore at the beginning of his career, who's a legendary offense coordinator, played behind Johnny Unitas. You're talking about in the game a long time. He kind of raised him, kind of created him until Peyton could do his own thing. Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady have an incredible relationship. That's because Josh McDaniels is an offensive whiz. You got McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. You got a lot of football brains behind the greats. Don't undersell that. If people don't have good people behind them, they don't have a chance. Like Jay Cutler, if he would have had Bruce Arians, I bet you Jay Cutler is one of the top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL. Because that's how Bruce Arians plays. Long ball, see you later, let's have a good time. Tony Romo, who was his OC?
It's been Jason Garrett.
Jason Garrett.
And what do we think of Jason Garrett?
He's a ginger. Forgot we have one of those in the room now.
Do you think Jason Garrett's a good coach?
No,
he's,
not really. I
he's
think he
the
would have
same
been fired.
As Tony Romo.
I think he would have been fired if it wasn't for Dak this year.
The Dallas and Zeke.
Yeah.
It's an offensive line, though. You build an offensive line, you build a good team. Everything's built, won, and lost in the trenches. The Dallas Cowboys are such an enigma because you're forced to pay attention to them because they're always on national TV. Uh-huh. And that's because Jerry Jones is a marketing genius. But you're forced to pay attention to them. I wonder if the Dallas Cowboys are ever going to win the Super Bowl again. And when they win, how obnoxious are their fans going to get?
Unbelievably obnoxious.
Is Chris Christie a Dallas Cowboys fan? Or
he was there.
He was hugging Jerry.
He's just a Jerry Jones fan.
Everybody's a Jerry Jones fan. Jerry Jones is one of my favorite people.
Him and his backwards bottom half of his body were there. jumping around doing weird shit.
I bet you Chris Christie does not listen to this. John McCain listens to this.
Shout out Johnny.
Chris Christie does not. And that's probably where Chris Christie's going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Shutting down bridges for traffic violations. He needs to listen to this goddamn show. That's what he needs to do. When we played against the Dallas Cowboys.
Go ahead. Continue.
Go ahead.
If somebody shut down a bridge that I had to go over.
Oh, that's forever hatred.
I am going to write a very strongly worded letter.
Dear motherfucker. That's how that one starts.
Go. You played Dallas.
Yeah. So when we played in Dallas, Papa John's was there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Papa John was there. Up in Jerry Jones's thing with his face.
He does that better pizza.
Do you remember the old days of the commercial? Do you remember the commercials with him back in the day? They were, hey, Papa! And he would throw a football down the street. I got a chance to meet him at one of Peyton Manning's like charity events back in the day. And obviously, I was a little intoxicated. So what did
he probably was, too.
What did I scream to him?
Hey, Papa.
Oh, loud, too. We were in a little tiny room, much like the size of this, and he's right next to me. And I go, hey, Papa! And he just looks at me. What? Can I get a photo, man? He said, yeah. And he put his fist right in the middle of my chest in the photo. So he's flexing, and my chest is getting caved in the middle of the photo. Next time I see him, and he's Jerry Jones box saying he's the biggest Dallas Cowboys fan ever. I'm like, wait a minute. You can't be a fan of every team, Papa. Don't be that big of a sellout. Sell your goddamn pizza. Don't sell every team out.
Next time you watch his commercial, watch this weird head thing he does when he goes, better pizza, better something, Papa John's.
He's made
it's this weird aneurysm, like
he's made
like a tick.
He's an alien. I'm pretty sure.
He's made a bazillion dollars.
A bazillion,
not just a little bit.
Yeah,
a lot of money. That guy.
Yeah.
Speaking of making a lot of money, Jerry Jones, that's the smartest guy in football.
I think oil money is my favorite money.
Jerry Jones isn't oil money, right?
He's not.
He is oil money.
Well, I thought he was.
Has to be. He's Texas.
Yeah, you're right. But he's
I mean, now he's not.
But. Him and Joe Buck, they did an interview. Joe Buck has a really good show, by the way. It's like a conversation with people, and it's really good. Jerry Jones did an interview one time, and Joe Buck said, why are you successful? And Jerry was like, you know, there's some guys that whenever they're playing a Power 5 and they're 218 yards out and there's a little bit of water in between them, they'll hit it 118 so they can get their wedge out and hit it 100 yards. Not me. I drive to the green from 218 out and go for that eagle every fucking time.
No laying up. That's the only way to live.
Every fucking time. And for me, it's worked out. For the Dallas Cowboys, I put all of my chips in the basket, and it's worked out for me. And I was like, God damn, this guy's a gangster. I was sitting at home watching this at like 2 in the morning. I'm like, I love that man.
They don't have a GM because he's the GM.
If I owned a team, I would be too. I'm not letting some bum underneath me ruin all my decisions, but it hasn't worked out for him.
No.
Dak Prescott's worked out well for him, though.
Yeah, it has.
And so has Zeke. And him owning his own stadium is gangster, zero taxpayer dollars. Let me just buy this for you guys, and then I'll make every dollar that comes through this place forever and ever and ever, and we're all just going to get.
I respect that move a lot.
Oh.
A lot.
In Dallas and Texas, people have to love that. Like, hey, listen, our owner is taking $0 from everybody's pockets, everybody's blue-collar pockets, and he's just putting all his money in. It's amazing.
Is he the best business guy, you think?
Yep. Him and Robert Kraft are the best two business guys. They're the ones that make all the decisions, I think. So whenever everybody's pissed off at Roger Goodell and everybody else for all these business decisions, I think it's Jerry and Robert Kraft. They're the two smartest guys out there. Ernie's got dirty money. I don't know how he got the Steelers. Horse betting.
Horse money.
Yeah, back. Yeah. Yeah.
Bonies.
I bet you that was clean money back in the day.
Let's not worry about it. Let's go.
I would say Jerry Jones, the best business guy, because he bundles. You know what bundle is?
like my cable and internet?
Bundle is the best way for you to buy business travel. It's called Upside.com.
What?
That's why I love it and why Jerry Jones loves it and why everyone I tell loves it. Every time you buy a trip at Upside.com, you save a ton of money and they give you an Amazon gift card worth $100, $200, even $300.
Hold on.
New sponsor alert.
Yeah, I was about to say, you can't just roll into this without welcoming this person to the family. Who is it?
Welcome to Upside.com.
Oh, I use them all the time.
Yeah, they bundle your business travel.
What?
It's the guy, the original, the Priceline guy, wanted to create a better way for people to travel for business and reward them for bundling their package.
So he created
Upside.com. Amazon.com. And every time you use it,
oh, that's stolen.
You get an Amazon gift card.
Shut up.
What?
Yes. Now, don't misunderstand. These are not gift cards designed for business travelers traveling to the Amazon. There's no stores there. It's just a big river, jungle, and lots of things that want to kill you. These gift cards are for Amazon.com, which is an online store that sells stuff. The way they do it is clever. Upside bundles your flights and hotels together for one low price. Bundled pricing saves you money. Thank you. I've been saying this the whole time.
That's what you've been saying this whole time.
Especially on business travel.
Of course you have been.
So Upside rewards you by giving you free Amazon gift cards. I'm telling you, if you're a frequent business traveler, your company saves a ton of money and you get thousands a year just for buying your air and hotel together at Upside. Plus, you still get all your miles. What?
We travel often. You're drunk.
Yeah. You get to keep your miles and you get all this other stuff, Amazon gift cards. You'd be crazy not to check out Upside.com if you're shopping for business or professional travel. It takes just 3 minutes. That's the same amount of time it takes to read this app. Only 3 minutes to see how much you can save.
There could have been a lot of things.
It's a lot. 3 minutes is a lot. You can make an 18-year mistake in 3 minutes. You can do a lot of things in 3 minutes.
That's right.
But you can also schedule an incredible trip.
Yeah. Only 3 minutes to save.
Tell them how.
To see how you can save by buying your flights and hotel together for one low price. Here's the best thing.
Two pages, Upside. Welcome to the team.
Check out what the Pat McAfee Show has arranged for you. Use the code America, and you're guaranteed to get at least $200 Amazon gift card for your first trip.
$200?
$200 Amazon gift card.
That's not a little bit of money.
That's double $100 gift card.
4 times 50. Unbelievable.
Use the code America. That's A as in anaconda, M as in monkey, E as in eyelash pit viper, R as in rainbow boa constrictor, I as in insects that are poisonous, C as in crocodile, and A as in another anaconda. Those are things in the Amazon jungle that will kill you. Don't go there. Your gift card is for the Amazon online store. Our code America gets you at least $200.
Unbelievable.
In an Amazon gift card for free. How can you do it? It's a no-brainer. Save big on travel and get a big gift card every trip. I love Upside.com. Upside.com. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details.
I was really hoping C was going to be cannibals.
There's a lot of those in the Amazon.
I should have.
So that's why you were up late last night.
Yeah.
So when we business travel,
yes,
there's a downside. We're hungover.
Right.
But Upside.com, we bundle.
Bundle.
Yeah.
Your shit.
Don't be a bum. No. You should bundle.
It's just like cable. You bundle to save money. That's what they're doing here.
So whenever I get on the internet, you know what I do?
What's that?
Watch porn. Then what do?
Watch it again?
No, I'm already done. Diggs.
Planning trips. Yeah.
I go, man, it'd be great if me and my business could travel somewhere together.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do?
Watch some more porn.
Yep. Because I get distracted. I mean, it's 2017.
Watch tape.
Yeah, I got to study film. Yeah, make my lady feel better.
New moves.
Then I go to Upside.com and we're all going. Where are we going? New York, Monday. See you later. Let's all go. Upside.com. We're all going to New York.
Here comes some Amazon gift cards.
What?
Yes, please.
For every ticket or just for one purchase?
For your purchase.
So we should schedule this individually.
You'll probably
schedule it.
We'll end up with $900 in gift cards. Dude.
I'm not sure where the math came there since it's just 200 times nothing gets you to 900, Todd.
No. I'm going to reread the ad.
Don't do it.
Don't. It was so long.
$100, $200, even $300.
Wow.
Our trips are expensive. We'll probably qualify for the $300.
I would think so. Well, welcome to the team, Upside.com.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. That's a cool app.
That is a really cool app. And if I was to travel anywhere within the next probably month, I am going to New York. But aside from business, if it was just for pleasure, you know where I'm going? I'm going to hang out with this guy. On the phone now is a guy that I had no idea I would love so much. I got a chance to meet him at the Indiana Black Expo Celebrity Basketball game. He was the only guy that would pass me the ball. That's incredible news because what he is a 2003 NBA champion with the San Antonio Spurs. Tim Duncan coined him as the best or the ultimate teammate. This guy was drafted and then he didn't see the NBA until 3 years later. He's a grinder. He's got grit. He's been all over the NBA. Everybody that has talked about him, who's been his teammate, who has coached him, has said nothing but amazing things. The media took a couple shots at him because he ended up in some situations that weren't the best, but all he's done is bounce back. This is an incredible man. We're lucky to have him on the phone. NBA champion, Steven Jackson.
Steven! Hey, that intro was classic. Hey, I hope somebody recorded that answer. I need to take that. I need to travel with that.
Well, that's Steven, that's kind of how this goes. It's a goddamn podcast. Yes, we recorded it. How you doing, man? How's life?
I'm good, man. I can't complain. How about you?
Good. Life is going good. I'm busy a little bit. Hey, I wanted to talk about this real quick. And obviously, I'm in Indiana, so I have to talk about two situations that happened here. They're the only flaws in your resume. But I think it's a lot deeper than what people could think. When you got into the fight with Ron Artest, I read something on your Wikipedia today that said when you were 16, your brother got jumped and you weren't there to protect him. And Donnie Walsh, the Pacers CEO, says that the reason why he thinks you got involved in that is because, just like Tim Duncan said, you're just the ultimate teammate. Is that what happened?
Well, you know, that situation, you're losing my brother. You know, he got jumped by three guys, and I know if I would have been there, you know, he wouldn't end up, you know, being in the hospital with 18 staples in his head fighting for his life, you know, and he ended up not making it. But just the situation where I'm with my teammates more than I'm with my family during the course of the season. So these guys become your family. They become your brothers. You're with them every day. So I'd never be in a situation, Pat, where me and you in the bar, you get into a confrontation, and I'm worried about what I have going on or what I have to lose. I just leave, but I wake up the next morning, you're in the hospital, you dead. I couldn't live with myself. So I'm the type of guy, if I'm with you, I'm with you. We're going to get home and we'll deal with the consequences later. And Donnie Walsh is right. You know, ever since that situation, I always keep that in mind when I'm with somebody. You know, if I'm with you, I'm with you. And losing my brother is something that I always hold dearly. But, you know, like I said, Ron is my teammate. I was with him whether he was right or wrong because, like I said, he was my family.
That's the thing that people don't really understand. Whenever, like for me, the media never really liked me as a punter in the NFL. Now, granted, the media doesn't like any punters in the NFL, but they did not like me as a punter in the NFL. But when I retired, all that I cared about was that my teammates and coaches respected what I did. That's all I cared about. And for you, you've had these two blips that have happened mostly out of loyalty. And that was what the media talked about a lot. But everybody that you have ever played with or coached under says you're the best teammate of all time. That has to be one of the best compliments you've ever heard.
Oh, I mean, and I'm just like you, you know, I hold that dearly. That's what meant more to me than everything, because that's the guys I'm out there breaking bones, bleeding and fighting for, you know, the guys on the team. And, you know, I really never cared what people on the outside thought about me. Now, that's something I never did. But at the same time, it's a lot of media people that do get it. You know, it's a lot of media people that get it. More than media people that don't get it. But at the end of the day, you know, everybody should approach it like that. You know, I really don't care about nobody outside this organization. It's me and these guys. We got one common goal, and that's to be champs. And we're gonna be here for each other through thick and thin. And if a guy doesn't have the attitude on my team, then I don't want him my teammate.
Hell yes, that's a deep comment. That's real, because there's so much fake right now in professional sports, especially this younger generation. But let's go back to when you and I were teammates and we got killed because nobody would pass me the ball. What the fuck happened there?
You know what, Pat? I'm not going to lie to you, my bro. I felt at that time, you know, I was in the process of actually trying to go back to the NBA, so I was in great shape. I felt good. And, you know, I was excited to come out there and play. And just like you said, gave me a compliment, I got to give you a compliment too, bro. You made the game fun as hell. I had no idea that you was that funny. I didn't know you had that much character. You know what I mean? Which drew me closer to you, because I love people who beat themselves regardless of where they are. You know what I'm saying? And I salute you for that, because I've always been that guy.
Hell yeah, man. You were putting on a clinic. I'm telling you, you looked impressive. And I was following your Instagram afterwards, directly after, because I had no idea that I was going to be such a big Steven Jackson fan. Because to be honest, as a white kid from Pittsburgh, the only Steven Jackson I'd ever heard of was whenever you beat the hell out of some people in Detroit. So I had no idea. I was very shallow. But then I got a chance to talk to you, and I was like, this is one of the coolest dudes ever. And then I started following you on Instagram, and you were talking real about an NBA comeback and get better gang and all this stuff now. And you were putting up some incredible highlights. You're still doing it right now. How old are you?
I'm actually 39 tomorrow.
And are you going to do that? You're doing that Ice Cube 3-on-3 league, or what are you getting into?
Yeah, I'm definitely doing the Ice Cube Big Three League. Me and Chauncey Billups have our own team called the Killer Threes. I'm also doing the Champions League, which is 5-on-5. When that league gets started around the same time, I'll be in both of those leagues, along with doing my ESPN stuff. But my ultimate goal is to get back coaching, man. You know, I know so much about the game, and hell, shit, I didn't go to college. Didn't go to high school half the time. So, you know, basketball is all I know, so I got to do what I know.
If you were to get back into coaching, where would you want to get under Pop at San Antonio, or how would you? What would be the path? Is it college or is it NBA?
Well, you know, I definitely want to go to the NBA. I don't know nothing about college, Pat. I don't know shit about that. I don't want to know nothing about going to no classes, nothing like that. No. I'm going straight back to where I belong in the NBA. But I've always been told by Coach Mike Brown, which is the head assistant for Golden State, you know, whenever he gets another head coaching job, he's bringing me on. You know, I almost had Steve Kerr offer me a coaching job last year. You know, we talked about it, actually, but then we talked about me coming to camp, but none of that never happened. So I just got to be in a situation where I'm with guys that's going to let me be me and just going to let me give my passion to the game just like I did when I was playing.
How do you feel about the modern NBA right now?
The game has changed. It's soft. A lot of these guys are getting baby. You know, a lot of these guys couldn't play when I was playing.
Bunch of pussies, I mean? You're saying, huh?
Yeah, definitely a bunch of pussies. and I would call it what Donnie Walsh said back when I was. He called them bonus baby. It's a lot of bonus baby. We living in a time where the players are really running the league. They're making the most money that their players have ever made. You know, with TV deals and contracts. So this is it. They're definitely baby. You got guys like Chandler Parsons, who's averaging 6 points and almost really out for the season again, making $94 million. He's been hurt every year, but they paid him $94 million. So what they're saying is, all we have to do is like you. We don't want to win. This is the organization that's telling these guys, we don't care if we win or not. Just be a good kid and we're going to pay the money. So what is that saying to the fans? We're going to pay these guys. We don't care about winning. We just want to stay out of the media. Nah, that's not right. Find guys that want to win. Pay the guys that appreciate the game and going to respect the game and go out there and play the right way and want to win. But these days, these kids know nothing about winning. All they know about is being friends, making up handshakes, and finding a way to get the newest shoes. They know nothing about winning, Pat.
Do you think that's a social media generational issue, or what do you think that is?
Well, I'm glad that I didn't have social media when I was in the meat of my career. I was doing too much.
Yeah, me too. I was about to say, those strip clubs that I used to go to, probably the same ones you and I went Sunset. I'm happy there's no social media whenever I was younger.
Pat, no. I'm glad they didn't have social media. My life would have been ruined. We set records in stripper clubs. I wouldn't be surprised if we went to some strip clubs and our jerseys hanging up at the top of the wall.
You invested in some places.
They retired your number.
We had some serious parties, Pat.
Do you think? But that is a real question. Do you think the social media thing? Everybody wants to be friends with everybody so they can get followers from each other. Do you think that's the big issue with the league and with kind of the younger generation of professional athletes right now? Everybody just kind of in it for followers and get popular and famous instead of being a dick and winning?
Well, social media has a lot to do with it because everybody's, you know, trying to worry about how everybody sees them. You know, the thing, if we had social media, we would have used it to the point where we were able to market ourselves.
Yep.
You know, because the NBA only marketed certain players, the top players. You know, it was guys like me that every team I was on, I made better. You know, I got teams to the playoffs that never been to the playoffs in double-digit years. So, guys, the NBA only marketed certain players. If we would have social media, when I was in the media of my career, a lot of guys would use that for self-promotion. These guys are really not using it for that. They're using it to be cute and, you know, and to be friends and show how they're bonding. And, you know, I don't like it because I wouldn't want a guy on my team in the summertime working out with a guy for another team that we got to compete with.
Yeah, come back. Fuck all of that.
Right, I hate that.
So you're not riding banana boats.
Yeah, you come back to practice and compete against us, but you've been working out with somebody from the next team. Like, I don't understand that. It's a new age.
Yeah, my friend Diggs here just mentioned, how'd you feel about that banana boat photo?
Oh, man, that was the worst. that was the worst. You know, I mean, that we all know that certain guys hang together, but, you know, you never seen in the summertime, you never seen Jordan and Charles Barkley on a boat together. You know, even as close as Magic and Isaiah was, you never seen them on vacation together when they were playing in media career. So it's just a different day, you know what I mean? Guys really don't care about winning. They more cared about being friends.
Where are you playing basketball at? Do you walk into like an LA Fitness and play basketball and just dominate little white kids all over the place? What are you doing?
You know, actually, I play in different leagues, but just like this, I wake up every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. I wake up at 5 a.m. I'm at the gym at 5:30. I lift weights from 5:30 to 6:30, and I play at LA Fitness from 6:30 to like 9 o'clock. But the guys there are decent guys. You know, I'm 39, so everybody's in there is around my age. But, you know, I'm in great shape, so of course I'm dominating. If I go to any LA Fitness in the United States and don't dominate, I'm hanging basketball up.
That's probably a good rule.
Yeah.
Hey, don't come to my LA Fitness, Steven.
I got something for you.
So you're doing the ESPN thing right now. Are you enjoying that more or less than you thought you would?
Well, you know what? I'm enjoying it way more for the simple fact that I got blessed to be with the right people. You know, Rachel Nichols, we've had a great relationship while I was playing. We were always honest with each other. And when she had a show, when she reached out to offer me a job on the show, I was already down with it. But when I met the producers, Steve and Danny, you know, we're very similar. And anytime you offer the job and they allow you to be yourself, that's the best situation you probably possibly could be in.
That's where I'm at right now.
Exactly.
It's not ESPN, it's Barstool. That's a little bit more my style, but you get it. Hey, I want to go back to the intro whenever I said Tim Duncan called you the ultimate teammate. What was it like playing with Tim Duncan? I think David Robinson, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was able to play with David Robinson 2 years. Won a championship, David Robinson's last year. I mean, it was great because, you know, the type of guy I wasn't the normal player for San Antonio Spurs. You know, I was rough around the edges. I hung out. I wore big jewelry, you know. I was up to date with all the styles and cars.
You were braided up, dreaded up.
All that. You know? So that was something new to San Antonio. These guys are clean cut, you know, shirts tucked in. I was totally different. So to be on that team and to be embraced by the best power forward ever, the best player on that team at the time, you know, I was his guy, you know, regardless what the media said, regardless how many times Pop screamed at me or blamed stuff on me, when it was time to go somewhere, when it was time to go play paintball, time to go out to eat, or time to shoot a Adidas commercial, I'm the first guy Tim came to. And Tim knew when we had big games, Pat, he knew he could rely on me.
Hell yeah.
And I proved it every night.
Well, I'll tell you what, the best teammates are normally the big guys in the big games. That's kind of how it works. The guys that everybody looks to is the best teammate.
Yeah, and you know what? With, like I said, with Tim, he had his confidence in me. Like a lot of guys on the team, you know, like even at times where they gave props to other guys. Perfect example, the Western Conference Finals Game 6. If you look at that game, I carried us that whole game. Tim was struggling, Tony was struggling, Ginobili had a decent game, but I really carried us that whole game. Steve Kerr came in, and don't get me wrong, those four threes he hit was very big for us. But he came in and hit those four threes. They totally forgot about me carrying the team because I wasn't as big of a name as Steve Kerr at the time. And I remember they was interviewing Steve Kerr after the game, and all the team was praising him and the media was praising him. Tim Duncan and Ginobili came back. Well, I was sitting in the back of the locker room. They came back and told me, "You deserve that trophy." That meant everything to me. It felt like I won it then.
That's fucking awesome. That's a cool moment right mm-hmm. there. Imagine Manu Ginobili and Tim Duncan looking at you and going, "Hey, man, you deserve that fucking trophy." That's a cool moment.
Yeah, it felt like I won it. So after that, you know, it really didn't bother me no more.
Yeah, I can understand that. When you look back in your NBA career, what do you want people to say about it?
That was one tough motherfucker. I honestly think, Pat, if they really do their history, I'm one of the top 10 most underrated players, one of the best players to never make an All-Star game. And every team I've been on, you know, I've won. You know, I've gotten teams to the playoffs. So, you know, I say that, you know, I got close to 13,000 points in the championship, a lot of people don't get that.
That's incredible. 14 years in the league you did?
Yep.
How trying was those first 3 years after you got drafted when you weren't called up to the NBA yet? Did you just know you were going to make it?
Nah, because it was like I said, it was a grind. I broke both of my feet during that time.
Oh, what?
So I broke my right foot. I went to Australia at 18, broke my foot in Australia, came back, healed up, ended up going overseas to Venezuela and Dominican Republic, coming back and trying out for the Bulls. It's the day before the cut for the Bulls, and I'm actually the best player in the camp, break my other foot. So I end up getting cut. Yeah, that killed me. I end up calling home, crying to my mom, telling her I'm done. Like my feet won't act right. My mama, she's like, "You crying?" Like she really treated me like I was a baby. Like, "You crying?" Like,
your mom was a single parent, right? Worked two jobs. Yeah. She was a badass lady.
Yeah, she was like, exactly. She's like, "You crying? Are you gonna give up?" And she said, "I must be talking to the wrong person." She was about to hang up the phone. That made me stop crying immediately. Like, my mama, you know what, you show her right. I ain't no bitch. Let me get myself together. let me heal up and bounce back on my feet. And I ended up going to New Jersey the year later, having a great camp, ended up starting my first rookie game, and I was in ever since.
Godly.
That's awesome.
You are one tough motherfucker. Hey, what's your favorite drink of choice? Do you still drink, or are you just training?
I have a drink every once in a while. I've been watching a lot of Peaky Blinders and a lot of I just watched the whole season of Sons of Anarchy. So I've been drinking a lot of scotch and a lot of whiskey.
I love the fact that you're referencing your TV shows you're watching to tell me what you're drinking at the time.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
Yeah. I'm into the Crown, Vanillas, the Macallans, the Jamesons, you know, stuff like that.
Where are you living right now? You in L.A.?
Atlanta.
You're in Atlanta?
Yeah, I've been living in Atlanta. I played for the Hawks in 2004, bought a house, ended up selling it last year, but I'm still here. I've been here 14 years.
Who's the most famous friend you have?
The most famous friend?
Like, not just like somebody you know. Like, people ask me that question. I go, like, Peyton Manning, but we're not friends. I just so happen to know him. Who's a guy like you hang out with on a regular basis?
Somebody I talk to and I hang out with on a regular basis. Babe, who you would say my most famous friend probably is, if it's not Al Harrington, it's probably Rick Ross. I talked to him recently.
Oh! Hey, you let Ricky Rose, if Maybach Music needs a white guy on their fucking track, Pat McAfee's the guy. I got some Stack 5 in me, cuz.
I got to hear the bars, Pat.
Hey, listen, just like Ricky, I'm Maybach. Your new girl's my way back. You wifed her up. I slayed that. Want my life, so I know you hate that, huh?
Bars. Bars, say, Pat, you've been holding that in.
Hey, how fun was making that rap album?
Oh, man, you know, it was fun to me because, you know, I've actually, my first time recording in the studio was I was like 15, 16. I got a chance to record on a mixtape with Pow Wow. And,
People's Champ.
Yeah, the People's Champ. That's my guy, man. He allowed me to be on the song. But I have, you know, I have like four or five mixtapes. I just love it because I take it just as serious as I take basketball. You know, they always take athletes as jokes. They're doing it just because they have the money to do it, da 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 da. But they don't know, you know, basketball or just sports in general and music go hand in hand.
Absolutely. You know,
just like athletes want to do music, well, musicians want to play sports. They all think they can play sports, and they all suck except Chris Brown.
Are you friends with Chris Brown?
Yeah. I actually, you know, he's a cool dude. He actually FaceTimed my daughter on her birthday last year, so it was pretty cool.
Have you like talked to him about bouncing back after making a bonehead decision?
Well, you know what? Honestly, I haven't talked to him about it, but honestly, he's on tour right now, and he's breaking records again on tour. So at the end of the day, say, Pat, I'm going to keep it real. You know I'm a realist. This motherfucker's still selling albums and still selling our tour, so they can say what they want. If he ain't in jail, he doing his job.
Hey, he got punished, right? He made a horrible decision. Now he's just making bank and still selling out. If the people still want to hear the man, let him eat, right?
Hey, that's what I say. You know, like, we all make mistakes. I know I'm far from perfect. I honestly thank God that I'm imperfect, because that's how I learned a lot of my lessons. You know, experience is the best teacher.
Absolutely.
And the people, we have to understand, this kid has been a multimillionaire since he was 17.
Oh. I couldn't imagine.
I think he's like 26, 27 now. So this kid has been in he's been in his limelight for a long time. And just imagine kids like me, who I'll be the perfect example, come in the NBA and get all this money at 18. We don't know what to do with it. We fuck off a lot of money. We make a lot of mistakes. So you just got to think, this is Michael Jackson at 16, 17. So, this kid had to see a lot and deal with a lot. And I think he's handled it well to say he's such a big star, but he can handle it a lot better because Michael Jackson wasn't on the Instagram, doing all the things.
It was in cameras everywhere he went.
And Michael Jackson didn't argue with Vanilla Ice like he was with Soulja Boy.
I don't know if that was a shot at Vanilla Ice or not, but I respect it. Comparing him to Soulja Boy, I respect it a lot. Hey, I always said this, like when I went to college, they should have offered me a professional athlete class. Like they should have told me what to do with all this money I'm about to get because I never had money either. They should have told me about finances, about people taking advantage of me and making stupid decisions. I mean, I bought an Escalade the day after I was drafted. I didn't see a check for 60 days. I almost got my Escalade almost got repoed the first time. Like it's, I had no idea. What was the most ridiculous purchase you made through your career?
Well, I'm going to tell you this. So the year, like you said, I got drafted by the Suns in 97, but they told me they were going to release me. But they were going to give me
$250,000.
Cool. And they said, we're going to release you, but we're going to give you $250,000 over the course of the season. Well, they gave me a check for $25,000 cash up front, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was, I think I was 18, 19 at the time. Mike Bibby, which is he's one of my best friends. I went and picked up Mike, my little brother and his sister, went to the bank, cashed a check, $25,000 cash. About 7 hours later, after we left the mall, I probably had like $7,000,
$8,000
left.
Day of check.
We balled out. I mean, every pair of Air Max, Jordans, Jabot jeans was the jeans at the time, Guess jeans. I mean, we had everything you can name that was nice at that mall.
Jesus. Day of getting your check. I'm telling you, I did the same thing because I didn't understand exactly what a signing bonus meant. So I thought a signing bonus meant as soon as I signed my name, that money was just going to hop into my bank account. It did not for 60 days. Did not. Hey, what do you do? How can people find you on Instagram, anywhere else, and on ESPN?
All right. Well, on Instagram, you can find me at _STAK_5_. On Twitter, you can find me at DATRIL_5. DATRIL, TRIL, stack 5. I'm actually going to be on the jump next week. We're also doing a special on the We Believe team we had in Golden State 07. So I'll be on the jump Saturday and also Monday and Tuesday next week on ESPN.
Well, we appreciate you so much coming on. From Detrill Pat McAfee to Detrill Stack 5. I thank you so much for chatting with us, man. If you ever have time again. Who's going to win the NBA this year?
I'm going with Golden State.
They're unbelievable. Did you know that as soon as Kevin Durant signed with them? You and Kevin Durant are kind of boys, right? He rapped with you in your one of your mixtapes?
Yeah. We have a song together called Long Let the Top. It's on iTunes. You got to check it out. Kevin Durant can actually rap. But, when they had Kevin Durant, it was actually a no-brainer. And I honestly believe that, him getting hurt was the best thing for them, for the simple fact that the Golden State team had to get back to playing the championship form without KD. Now, this championship team that won a championship without KD, now you're adding the MVP player to an already championship team. They wasn't playing like that. They were deferring to Kevin Durant and making it his team. Well, now you have the championship team. Adding on the MVP, that's going to be dangerous coming to playoffs. So I definitely have them winning the championship.
Do NBA refs suck?
Times 10.
All right, man. Thank you so much for joining us. From all of us, Steven, tell your lady I said hello to. I don't think I got a chance to meet her at the Black Expo. But thank you so much for coming on, man. We appreciate the hell out of you, brother.
Man, Pat, anytime you need me, man, you're my brother, man. Just give me a call.
All right, you got it. Steven Jackson. What a hero. See you later, brother. Golly.
All right, have a good one.
Golly, what a fucking guy. In that interview, he referenced a song, Diggs, that I think you would really enjoy. I don't think you've listened to it. I have. Have you heard the song, Todd?
I have not.
It's him and Kevin Durant.
Okay.
got to get into something soon. Jesus. It's lonely at the top. We're never gonna stop. Cause we're taking over. That's right, you know us. Haters gonna hate. But we gon' celebrate. We're taking over. That's right, you know. It's lonely at the top, Diggs.
Yeah. I wouldn't know. Only at the top, well, I'm
antisocial. Got what? Big and pocket money, I'm so bi-coastal. What? Get it, boy, bring pain, hurt like a old soul. Bars? Get your game face on. Poker, got money, rap. I ain't got two. Killings every time I pull a drop through. Kill. Shine hard, cause I'm not you. And all that hating bars doing is not true. Married to the money. Yeah, I do. Married to the money. Listen, you like hot shoes. So when you see me in the flesh, this will guap do. Oh. Haters wear my name out like a oh my God. Crushed it. When's Kevin Durant come on? Next? Is Kevin Durant about to come on?
It says featuring Kevin Durant.
So a little slide forward.
Could be.
Maybe he's doing a little background stuff.
That's not him.
I don't think he's a singer.
You think KD's on the hook?
Like Akon? Why these other boys climbing up, looking at my watch, I can tell that their time is up. Oh. Young boy in the game, and I'm 23, money like a vet, why I fret over 100 G's. I ain't never got a lot on my raps, though. The hood in my heart, the state is on my back, though. Keep pushing for everybody who never made it, and keep stunning for everybody who ever hated. Trey 5 on my back for my OG, never overlooked a single word that he told me. Keep working, never ever will it stop telling other people's days. It's lonely at the top. That's a good song.
Tell you what, the hook is dope.
That is a good song.
I'm a sucker. For a good hook.
Absolutely. Good for those two. Getting into imagine Kevin Durant and Steven Jackson having a conversation about that song.
Oh, yeah. Hey, shout out Akon on the hook there.
No, it's Kevin Durant.
And that's Stack 5, S-T-A-K 5. It is on Spotify.
Lonely at the Top. Mm-hmm. That's a great song right there. 3-5 on my back from my OG. Remember everything that he something told me. That's a good little rhyme there by KD there.
It's about starting with nothing and then going out and getting something.
Started.
Right, pretty much.
Well, I think it's a lot about that, but I also think it's about something very interesting that happens to people who get successful quick. Everybody talks about how whenever they get successful, they change, right? Mm-hmm. Like everybody's like, oh, he's changed. But it's not really the person that changes as much as it is the people around him changes, mm-hmm. or her. I experienced that just a little bit. I mean, my family and I got in some epic fights whenever I got rich early. And they kept saying I was changing. I didn't think I was. I think people changed the way they treated me. And I think when it's in the NBA and when you're much more visible than I was when you're that young, it's an interesting concept to think about. Because you always want to be successful, but then when you get there, you have no fucking idea what to do.
Well, he talked about it in his interview, too. It's tough.
Yep, it is. It's difficult because you don't know what to do. And everybody mm-hmm. else around you is always looking for something. Like every time you guys see me, every time somebody comes and talks to me, what do I say? I say, don't give them anything. They fucking want something. Don't let anybody do anything. And that's because whenever you're young, people just try to take advantage of everything. And that's kind of the difference between your dreams of being successful and actually being successful. Mm-hmm. It's just different drama.
Makes sense.
I can't imagine being young and having money.
It was awesome. It was fucking awesome. It was awesome. My liver wasn't a little bitch like it is now. I used to go back to back. I did, you know how we just did New York and Vegas? There was 1 week where I went LA, Vegas, New York, Miami in 1 week. And it was out of fucking control. I get a text from like Pierre Garçon whenever I was in New York. He's like, yo, party in Miami tomorrow. I'm like, yep. I'm on the first thing smoking down there. And I was like, oh, damn. I feel like I just spent $20,000 these last week in L.A. and Vegas and New York. But, yeah, I got one more night in me for sure. I mean, I'm trying to go broke before the next season starts. Let's do it. And I did it. And that was back when my liver wasn't, you know, a little soft ass. But now.
When we were leaving New York, I was like, where do you think we're going next week in Miami?
That would kind of be a version of that trip, just the older version of it, kind of stretched out a little bit. I love Steven Jackson, though. That was a really cool conversation. Yeah. I hope to play basketball with him again in LA Fitness. I want him to throw me an oop.
Yeah, we need to get in the gym ASAP.
He's a good dude.
We also need
that's one of my favorite. I mean, John Daly, my number one favorite interview. That's number two.
Because it's real, though. Like, that's a real thing. When you're a teammate, you want to be the best teammate of all time. And you want Steven Jackson to be your teammate. I think that's just how it is. He made every locker room better. He mentioned it a few times. I got people to win, man. That's just what I was, a good teammate.
Right.
I hadn't been on a lot of losing teams in my life. And I don't want to say it's me, But goddamn, I'm a good locker room partner as well. So that's why I think I like Steven Jackson so much. Speaking of good luck, we lost, but I wasn't around much. Our high school football team was not good when I was there, but I wasn't around much.
Hey, we were 500.
You were talking about
I wasn't around much.
The way people treat you differently, like I know, like people automatically assume I have money now because of this watch I'm wearing. They think it's a really expensive watch.
It looks like
assume that I'm rich. I'm like, I'm not rich.
Hold on. You know the only issue with this whole show we're doing? I can't trust Todd anymore. When Todd starts talking to me, I have no idea if he's trying to fucking sell me something or if he's trying to have a conversation. And I'm starting to learn that every time Todd looks at me dead in my eyes, he's trying to fucking sell me something.
I was going to start to agree with what he was saying.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do an ad.
I was like, yeah, you're right. It is lonely at the top, isn't it, Todd? And then bang, right into a go. Watch.
I'm not at the top. I just look like I'm at the top because I got my watch at Movement Watches.
Oh.
MVMTwatches.com was founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high-quality, minimalist products at revolutionary prices. With over 1 million watches sold to customers in 160-plus countries around the world.
Fuck all of them except for ours.
Right.
Not all of them. Canada, Mexico, you're cool. But, yeah, you know.
We like some of them. I have a Movement watch, and it looks and feels awesome. I'm not even a big watch guy, but since I've been wearing it, everyone's asked me two things. Where'd you get it? How much did it cost? I'm like, I got it at MVMT.com and only $100. And they're like, no way. And I'm like, yes way. The company was started by two broke college kids that wanted to wear stylish watches and couldn't afford them.
Respect.
So they created this, a company that sells high-quality items
for
a low
price. I do like it.
Great watches.
I'm not a watch guy, and I'm wearing one.
Yeah. Nick has one. They started just $95 at a department store. You're looking at $400 to $500. Easy. Movement figured out that by selling online, they're able to cut out the middleman and retail markup. Get 15%. This is for you. Get 15% today.
Wow, that's almost 20%.
Almost 20%.
15%, a lot more than 10%, though.
It is. It's a lot more than 10%. A
lot more.
A lot of places might offer you 10%. Yeah. Not Movement watches.
No way.
They're up in the game.
And it's 300% more than 5%, which is crazy to think
incredible,
about.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible percentage that they're offering here. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to MVMTwatches.com/McAfee. This watch has a really clean design. Seriously, I've been getting compliments ever since I put it on. Get one for yourself.
What's the promo code?
Go to MVMTwatches.com/McAfee.
Oh, we made it simple for him. McAfee.
M-C-A-F-E-E.
That's McAfee. M as in movement watch. C as in clock on your wrist. A as in awesome. F as in fuck other watch companies. And E as in energy. And energy that you'll have whenever you're using a movement watch right there on your arm.
Join the movement.
That's good.
Thanks.
Good job, buddy.
Thanks, man. You know.
I really enjoyed the clock on your watch.
Clock on your wrist.
That was awesome.
That one too. Clock on your watch. First company to put a clock on your watch.
Yeah, right there. First company ever to do it. What a concept. Thank you, Movement Watches. Is that the first?
Two good new sponsors for us.
Welcome to the team, Movement Watches. Really? I was never a watch guy, but if you're going to put money in this show, I'll wear your watch.
Yeah.
No new friends, except for unless you're advertising.
Unless you're paying for it. If you're paying to be my friend, you got it. You absolutely got it. It's like John Daly. I bought my way into his friendship. What's up?
No, back to the Steven Jackson thing, Pat. Mm-hmm. Fill in the blank here.
Okay.
Your first rap album, mm-hmm. Pat McAfee featuring blank.
Rick Ross.
Mm. You're going straight to Rick Ross.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Rick Ross, my favorite rapper. So, like, when he said that, I had those bars on deck. I've already thought about rapping with Rick Ross like 10 to 15 times a night in my life at one point. I was really going to go full board and try to get a contract with Maybach Music.
Is he your favorite of all time?
Yeah, he's the best writer out there.
Okay, so your rap album you would do with Rick Ross. Mm-hmm. We already know that your country album you'll do with John Daly.
John Daly.
How about R&B?
Well, you got to do with Usher, I guess. Yeah,
Usher.
Usher, baby.
Yeah, you got to be with Usher. But just because you have to. I mean, everybody else was probably going to try to fuck you from what I've heard in the R&B industry. They like to have sex with, whoever.
Right.
And I would rather have Usher, who has a little credibility with those abs, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He has great abs.
Who's this?
This could be you.
Rick Ross and Usher together.
Ooh.
I like Rick Ross.
Strictly
as Rick Ross. Yeah, I don't want to hear him making love.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, this is it. We blowing money fast on this side.
We blowing money fast.
Yeah, you better keep up.
I think I'm Big Pat. Larry Hoover.
Hallelujah.
Did you play that before games?
What a man.
I have a lot of Rick Ross. So John Daly, Hit It Hard was on there. Hard. Uh-huh. I have a lot of Rick Ross on there, though. The I'm a Boss song with Meek Mill is my go-to at any given time in life. If I'm feeling a little under the weather, and that, just like Ricky, I'm A-back, Your New Girl's My Way Back, that goes to a I'm a Boss remix. If you drop Lil Wayne out of there, I have a full 16 ready for that at any given time.
What did you just say?
If you drop Lil Wayne.
Out of nothing.
He's in the remix, the I'm a Boss remix. Saying,
don't drop him out of anything.
I think you can, yeah. He's jumped the shark. Yeah. I'm not a Lil Wayne fan at all.
What does jump the shark mean?
Are you kidding me right now? Is this that you guys don't know what this means?
Is this a dolphin?
This is a your generation reference.
Oh, is this the Fonzie jump over the? Oh, yeah. I like that you pulled the old school out.
Yeah, jump the shark means he's done.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know that.
I enjoyed him before he went to jail. He went to jail, came back. I have no respect for him.
06 to 010, phenomenal.
Phenomenal, not just good, great. When I was in college, he was great.
That's what I'm saying.
Now he gets auto-tune, and I just can't. Wearing those weird women pants, leggings, get out of here.
We can agree on that, then.
Yeah. I love that I had to double-check that your definition of jump the shark was the same as my generation's definition.
I still have no idea what the fuck it means.
Yeah, it means like you're done. Like,
you can't outdo that, right?
Like,
I'm on
over
it.
The top.
Yeah.
It just means like
one
it's
too
over.
Far.
Yeah, too far. Yeah. Too much. Do less. Do less is what everybody said. But do back whenever he would... Say. Yeah. Back whenever he was like, I'll hit that with my Wayne. Will you shut the fuck up? Jesus Christ. I'll get on anybody's track and hit that bitch with that Wayne train. You remember that?
Yeah.
I enjoyed that album. It was a remix every song. He, like, Mike Jones' song.
Mixtape.
When he did that mixtape of everybody else's song. That was the last drought. That was the last one for me, yeah. The Sky is the Limit. That was one of my favorite songs, but yeah, of all time. But Lil Wayne's out for me. Rick Ross is in. And whenever he was getting threatened at all those concerts and he stopped touring and he became a ghostwriter for everybody, that's when he got really rich. And I think I might start ghostwriting for folks, guys.
I think you should.
I think I should ghostwrite.
Yeah.
Fat Boy's the writer behind some of your favorite songs. To Rick Ross.
Speaking of ghostwriting, you've dropped too many subliminal references for me to not bring this up. Todd dropped the Starter from the Bottom, Now We Hear.
Yep.
Diggs dropped the No New Friends. You dropped the Back to Back, the Meek Mill, the ghostwriting.
Yep.
Drake is going to star in a new British drama, Top Boy, after buying the rights to the show after it was canceled. So that's kind of a baller move.
Boss move. Yeah. Come on.
Show's getting canceled. I'm going to buy it and star in it myself.
Yeah.
Hold on. I love that move. I absolutely love that move. But Drake told me specifically.
I heard it.
That he was done acting. Do you have the clip?
No.
Talk about he told me specifically he's done acting. That's what he said.
Yeah.
I got these rap crackers that I got to act like I like, but my acting days are over. Fucking crackers for life.
Yeah.
Now he's buying a show so he can act in?
Yep.
Liar.
Drake is a liar. We knew it.
This is why he has enemies.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
Trying to drain him of his energy.
A lot of them.
So if you could buy a show and put yourself into it, what show would it be?
Ooh. Well, I just create my own show because I have a brain.
Yeah.
But if I was to go into it back in time and go into a show?
So yeah, there's not one show out there that you liked enough to just say, I would like to be on that show. You totally just want to create your own.
Yeah, I'd rather just create my own.
Okay.
Entourage.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. You want to be Vince.
See, you didn't think about this. You just...
I didn't. But Vince, you'd want to be Vince in Entourage. That's who I would want to be.
In ours, you're Vince. I'm Turtle. He's E.
Call me Drama.
Victory! Great show. Incredible
show. Todd's
old,
so maybe we'll switch those two. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Todd's a little bit more drama-ish, but I don't know if you're E at all.
No, it's kind of a rough...
By the way, I hated E.
Yeah, everyone hates
E. We would have to redo one of the characters after you bought it to fit.
Vince out.
Like story, yeah. Vince, you're out.
Vince, hippie, loser, out. See you later. You could have done that job so much better.
He is a little bitch, isn't he?
Yeah, I didn't fucking like him. I
was in a car accident.
I enjoyed the concept of Entourage a lot, but I didn't like the Vince.
Mark Wahlberg came up with the whole thing.
Yes, he did. I would bring back Mad Men, and I would write myself in.
Figured
in
that was Don
Draper character.
You love Mad Men.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Really,
absolutely love Mad Men.
So,
I'd rather just create my own show.
When Steven Jackson was talking about how he drinks based on what he's watching. I do the same thing. When I was watching Mad Men, it was old fashions.
Every night. I came back and saw you guys. We were going to speakeasies. I'm like, guys, where are we heading tonight? Oh, this is a cool new place. They got newspapers on the fucking windows.
No TVs.
I'm like, what are we doing in here? I don't know. Everybody just kind of looks
people
at each other.
People are smoking unfiltered cigs in the corner.
Yeah, I was so confused, and it was because of Mad Men.
I base my life off of every show that I watched. You'll notice my personality change.
What are you watching right now?
Yeah, Billions.
Respect. I don't know anything about it, but let's get it. Let's get them. All of those. What's that? You have it now?
I got niggas that are still trying fucking me over. I got rap niggas that I gotta act like I like. But my acting days are over. Fuck them niggas for life. Yeah.
Liar.
I got it.
Liar. That guy is a liar right there. He's buying a show just so he can act again. But I do think Drake is funny. I think Drake's a good actor. I was at the ESPYs that he hosted.
That was a good one.
Was it a good one?
Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you a little story about those ESPYs. Me and my friend Tripp, who's not the smartest human on earth, were at that. Trip. And we were the only two white people in a very large area, okay? And that was right after Sterling did his thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So Drake did a song called Sterling Never Loved Us. Do you remember that? Sterling Never Loved Us. It was the LA Clippers owner whenever he said the N-word.
Yeah, I remember this.
Sterling Never Loved Us. Sterling Never Loved Us. Show goes to commercial on TV. You know what the theater did?
Played it.
Completely quiet. All the lights come on. So me and Tripp are just sitting there in the middle of a sea of people that hate Sterling at the time, all black folks. And they're just starting to look at me and Tripp. And me and Tripp like wanting to stand up and go, Sterling never knew us. Sterling hated us too, if it means anything, guys. It was an awkward moment. Yeah. And then he did a whole piece about side chicks in the back. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Guess who was sitting right next to me, right behind me? Antonio Cromartie.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Is there a better person to be sitting around talking about side chicks? He's the best.
What's he on, like 15, 16 children?
He's got 100 kids. But Antonio Cromartie, I got a chance to play with him. Not play with him, obviously. We played football together. I didn't touch any of his genitalia. Great guy.
Figured that.
Really good guy. But whenever he was singing that side piece song, I was like sitting back because Antonio was with his wife. I'm like, this has got to be an awkward situation. Drake is just putting everybody on blast right now. And then he did the white thing later about Sterling. I'm like, fuck, now he's taking shots at us.
The way you guys felt then is how I felt when I went to the theater and watched Django Unchained. Because me and my buddy were like the only white people in there. Ugh. And I love that movie, but I was just like,
why? What happened?
I'm sorry, guys. You know what I mean? I was like, sorry.
So it sounds like, sorry.
I feel bad.
Sorry. We're from the north of the Mason-Dixon. This is right, not us. Right, I just want to let you know, we're from north of the Mason-Dixon. That's like that Black Expo game I'm talking about with Steven Jackson. It was right in the middle of when Todd's peers were all shooting unarmed black people. So like it was weird. I was the only white person there, and it was right in the middle of almost a civil war happening. Do you remember that? You came to that game.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was awkward. Everybody was just staring at me. And that was when Steven Jackson and I became friends, was in the pregame.
Yeah.
When everything had this antidote that white people were bad, basically. And that black folks needed to stick together and white people were bad. And I'm just sitting there holy fuck. Everybody's just staring at us. And Steven Jackson's sitting next to me. And I'm like, this is uncomfortable. And Steven's like, I'm just getting tight. I want to loosen up.
Like 15 minutes the guy did to start before the game on how
bad white
cops were slaughtering black people.
Yeah, and I'm staring across the court at Todd McComas sitting front row. The only white people are there to watch me. I'm like, Todd, this is your fucking fault. Speaking of, let's go behind the badge. Let's do it.
I was waiting for that to happen.
Let's do it.
Behind the badge. Behind the badge.
Nailed it. All right, so we did a Q&A on Twitter. Forgot to completely.
As I was looking up earlier, I was like, oh.
But here's a question we have, and Diggs has been thinking about it for a long time. Go ahead, Diggs.
Have you ever undercover had to try the drug that you were buying?
Good question, Diggs. I put you on the spot there. Me and Diggs had not talked about this before.
We did not.
That you showed some real professionalism right there, Diggs.
So like when you were buying that Coke, did you have to give a little off the knife?
I've never done Coke, but I've smelled it a few times. It
smells like chemicals, I assume.
Never had to, but I just did it because I liked it. No, I'm just kidding.
Most cop answer ever.
Never done it.
Really?
No, I was always able to talk my way out of it. So like, do people ask you that a lot?
Yeah, that should be a dead giveaway.
There's two things that drug dealers think will expose you as a cop. One is to make you do the drugs in front of them. Two, just asking if you're a cop that you have to say yes.
That's the law.
Obviously the dumbest thing.
Are you a cop? You know you got to say you're a cop if you're a cop.
Right, right.
That's a lie.
That's a lie. And I don't, I mean, it's a good idea, I guess, to try to make the cop do it, but I don't know. Drug dealers are stupid for the most part.
How'd you get around it?
I would just always have a story.
Like I got to go home to my family?
No.
I used to use, but now I'm a big businessman. Now,
Ten Commandments.
It's cutting into my prop. Yeah. My
Biggie
profit.
Mentioned quickly that you never get high off your own supply. Did you ever use that?
Yeah, all the time. I'm like, you may be an idiot if you use. That's your problem. You know what I mean? But I've been down that road, and it cuts into my money. I don't use no more. And if I hit that right now, I'm going to have a problem.
Wow. And so Todd flipped it on him like he was an addict.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, you weak ass. Do you use your own shit? What's wrong with you? Maybe I shouldn't be dealing with you. You're going to get caught and rat me out.
Making drug dealers feel bad about themselves while he's undercovering fucking them.
It's all about the mind fuck, right?
Do you do the dog the bounty hunter conversation after catching them? Like, yo, bruh, get your life together, bruh. Afterwards, do you do that?
Sometimes.
Were you did?
Sometimes I like these guys. You know what I mean? Like,
how long were you normally with the guy, like buying stuff from him?
I have been, like that Chase story we told early on, like I've been with that dude for months, like 2-3 months.
You guys are boys.
Seeing him a couple times a week and hanging out a little bit, you know, even though.
Almost fucked his wife.
Yeah. Did you ever get sold some phony product? Like, I know guys have been sold like bags of salt and grass clippings.
Are you for a friend?
Yeah.
Dude, I bought like $10,000 worth of baking soda in a hotel parking lot of ATF money. Yeah.
$10,000?
Like jackass.
How gangster is that drug dealer, though, that he's willing to sell $10,000 worth of
baking soda? This is how it went down. Like,
he's got some balls.
The first time.
Big balls. Because imagine if he's a real your guy really trying to buy that.
The first time I bought off this guy, it was in a projects, and it was an FBI case. They had this real hot like girl informant, and she was going. She had to connect to this guy.
She was a prostitute?
I don't know. She was pretty hot to be buying in this area, for sure. It never made sense to me. Something was up.
Woman of the night.
So she takes me with her.
Lady.
I buy heroin in this stairwell, and the guy, like a 19-year-old kid, comes down. I see it, like an older guy shove him out the door to send him down to me. So we're in the middle of the stairwell, and he has this giant gun in his pocket. And it's like an old, stupid-looking Josie Wells Civil War six-shooter with the
stolen. Giant, long this is definitely thrill. Stolen.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Sticking out of his fucking like gym shorts pocket, and he pulls it out on me, and he's like, "Strip!" So he strips me down, checks me all over. Whatever.
How naked? You got all the way naked?
I'm just down to underwear. Thank God. This girl was hot. And I was.
You had a wire on you, though, right?
I would have been. Like, do you think you have a problem when you get out of a pool? When a gun's in your face. Yeah. It's not impressive.
You had a gun point. In your fucking face at this point?
Yeah.
Like an old school Revolutionary War gun in your face.
Yeah.
By a 19-year-old kid in a hood?
Yeah. So I'm thinking in my head.
How have I never heard a story? Like, why is this just now happening?
I don't. I guess we didn't hit this topic before.
Attaboy, Diggs. Asking him good questions.
Stories just come to me when the question's asked. So good job.
Yeah.
So he's got this gun in my face, and he's like, strip me down. And I can give this away because they don't exist anymore, but the transmitter at the time was a pager because pagers were kind of still around a little bit. And I was always a heating and cooling guy. That was I worked for my uncle. That was my story. So it made sense I had a pager. So he looks at it. He can't tell any different. It looks like and acts like a regular pager. So the whole time, though, I'm like, this kid is going to accidentally shoot me in the face because he does not look like he is comfortable holding that gun. And that gun's ridiculous. It may go off on its own anyway. It's so old. So I was like, what am I going to do? I was thinking, well, do I just push her away, grab him by the arm and try to pull him down the stairwell? But what about that guy that keeps popping his head out and checking on us? So finally it just came to me. I'm like, hey man, you want to sell that gun? And he was like, $250. And they're like, $250? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, done. So I fucking spent my buy money, and I bought the gun from him.
And now you have the gun.
I shit you not. He sold me that gun, didn't take the bullets out. There was three bullets in it, in the chamber.
And he gives you the gun.
Didn't even unload
he
it.
He arms the guy that he was supposed to come fucking.
Sell me this gun. I leave with the gun and a little bit of heroin, And I told that story because I'm going back a second time, right? And I only bought this little button, like a $60 thing of heroin.
Yeah,
before.
I know.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, you know, you've been at that trade. Yeah. So, so this time I'm like, I was kind of new to undercover, and I'm like, man, I'm really getting fucking good at this. I can fucking do anything. So I talked to the guy, the same guy, Shorty, they called him, and I was like,
the 19-year-old?
Yeah. So I'm like, hey, man, can you do like a bigger amount for me of crack? Because in my head I was thinking, I forget the weight, but like over a certain amount in crack was like forever jail time, right, versus this little bit of heroin. And so I'm like, can you get me like 3 or 4 ounces of crack or something ridiculous? The mistake being, you never jump from just a little bitty bit to a big bit.
You wanted the big fish. You got greedy.
Because they're like, this guy's
pigs
white
get
boy
fed, comes, hogs get slaughtered.
Yeah.
This is what happened.
This white boy comes back to you with all this money. We'll just roll him and take his money, right? So an older detective was like, we ain't letting you do that, man. You're going to go there. You're going to get killed. They're going to rob you to take your money. It's a setup. He ain't got that much crack. He's a little bitty heroin dealer. So I'm like, no, I got this, man. I can do it. Well, they wouldn't let me do it, so I had to park in the hotel parking lot next to the projects while all these ATF guys were up, you know, on the second floor of this hotel. Like, there was a sniper there, like, covering and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there in the girl's car. I'm in the passenger seat. I have a gun in the glove box. But
the Revolutionary War gun or the cop gun?
No, this is a different gun.
Okay, good.
So this guy, I'm waiting. I'm calling. The guy keeps stalling. And in my head, I'm thinking, ah, fuck, maybe these guys are right. He doesn't even have it. This deal's not going to happen. Then all of a sudden, he calls me back after sitting there for like an hour, and they're about to cancel the detail. And he says, hey, I'll send somebody to you. He's got your stuff. I'm like, okay, cool. This kid comes walking around the fence and just starts walking at us real fast. And as he got up, I'm like, I looked at the girl and I go, he's going to shoot me in the face. If he pulls out a gun, just bail out that door. Like, I think I'm dead. And he walks up and fucking pulls out this big old bag of white powder and throws it in my lap. And I had the cash in my hand, and I was so freaked out, I just handed him the cash, and he walked off. And I sit there for a minute. I'm like, whew. And I looked down at that bag, and I looked at her, and I was like, I just got fucked. That's baking soda.
Yeah. And you didn't die. Obviously.
I didn't die though, so who cares? $10,000, fucking
I have a question.
Money.
When you were like, when you arrest these people, mm-hmm. that Dog the Bounty Hunter question.
Yeah.
Are you there for the like the actual arrest, or do they know that you're the guy, or what happens?
Usually they'll pick them off without me, and then they'll take them to a jail. And when the other guys will undercover guys will try to flip them if there's something above them they're interested in, and then if they were like, I don't know what you're talking about, man, you got the wrong guy. Then maybe I'll walk in and be like, remember me?
yeah, I remember you, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel bad?
Yeah, sometimes you feel – because sometimes you really – like you said, sometimes I work on a guy and I turn him into an informant and he helps me work on a guy. And you're like, man, if these were different circumstances, we could fucking probably be bros hanging out. You know what I mean? We just got different jobs that put us in this situation. So sometimes you feel bad.
That's awesome. And that was –
Behind the Badge. Behind the Badge.
What a fucking song.
I love that music.
It's your DJ, theme music. Do you
know
that?
But this DJ you got.
DJ Lemmy Vice. This is your theme music. Like, if you were to be a baseball pitcher or a closer, that would be your walkout song.
Oh, yeah.
You should feel good about that.
Yeah.
That's a really
good. I appreciate that, dude. I appreciate you getting it done.
Did Kim Jong do anything? We need to hear about him tomorrow?
You'll save it.
All right. Final thoughts. Nick.
I've been thinking all show about a show for you to buy and remake and improve upon.
What is it?
And I think I got it.
What is it?
The Cosby Show.
I don't even know what to say there. I don't even know. I don't know if that's a shot or not, or a predictor of the future. I have no idea what that is.
I've never seen an episode.
Dr. Huxtable, right?
Yep, Cliff.
Yeah. You ever seen the Bill Cosby thing?
No. Are you serious?
It was like the biggest show that ever existed.
When was it on?
He doesn't know Jump the Shark. He's never watched the Cosby Show.
Was it before 2000?
Exactly.
Mid-80s.
Ha, final thoughts.
Todd, can I shoot your gun?
Yeah. Which one?
The Revolutionary War one.
I don't know where that thing is, but it's hopefully it's in the
You guys ever steal stuff from the evidence, Lab?
No, I don't know how you
that
could.
Laugh. No, I don't know what that even means. That's a yes.
I don't know how you could nowadays. I know guys used to do it. Obviously, I've heard stories. Too many fucking cogs in the wheel now, man. There's, you know what I mean? I can't even get in that building.
Todd, final thoughts.
Final thought is Steven Jackson is now my favorite NBA player of all time.
Yeah.
And weirdly enough,
what about Larry Bird? Hold on, Larry Bird. Let's go back.
I'm going to put, okay, let's put Steven Jackson, number one guy under 40. That's ever played in the NBA.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Yeah. Modern age.
Modern age NBA.
Steven Jackson.
He's a warrior.
Good dude. Tough motherfucker.
And funny as shit.
Diggs, final thought.
Spider almost killed me in the shower this morning. Fuck spiders.
Okay.
I agree with that, though, by the way.
They're the worst.
What is the purpose of them?
I don't know. They're creepy. They're ugly.
To kill people?
Yeah.
I think you almost got bit or you,
I got
you drowned
in.
It?
I got in. I slid the shower curtain shut. It fell down. I fucking fell back into the wall. Grabbed the nozzle and drowned it.
How do you know? I was going to say, did you see him get ready to bite you like you were holding
it? Did you see him doing this? Did you see him doing this with the nozzle? I'm happy I could put you guys up in such a clean place.
I'm drowning you.
It's really futuristic of you. For me, final thought is this. Our shows are going to get better. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.